Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
And welcome to the program. So glad you have tuned in, listener. This is a call-in program. We are live, and we want you to write a number down and have it right by the phone. So if you have a question or comment that you want to share with us, you are ready to go. Here's the number, 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. Have that number right handy. So as you listen to our program and the discussion, if something comes into your mind that you would like to have clarified or expanded, you can just call that number, 800-775-4673. You know, no one likes to be taken, to be swindled, hoodwinked, or bamboozled. We tend to reject anything that's not sincere or real. Or do we? Today we talk with Dr. Timothy Jennings about a counterfeit that does more than inconvenience or embarrass us. This type of swindle can destroy relationships, marriages, families, even lives. How? By attacking first the mind and then the heart of love. Dr. Jennings, you'd think that by now we'd have the subject of love down pat. We've had 6,000 years of practice. Why do so many of us seem to be so lousy at love?
Well, I think it's because we actually have a distorted concept of what love actually is, and we come at it from an emotional base of trying to get needs met rather than from an altruistic base of trying to help others.
You know, as I look at the development of the human being, when we're born, we're all about us, aren't we?
There's no question. We're all about us. This is, if you take the scripture approach to it, of course, this is the infection to our characters, our hearts, our minds, which brings pain, suffering, death, selfishness or self-centeredness, or as the psychiatrists say, egocentrism. It's about me, seeking to get rather than seeking to give.
So it's almost like you're saying that some of us never grow out of that. How do we stay there and how do we get out of it?
I think that's exactly right. I don't think we have the power in and of ourselves to be able to change the heart. This is a heart condition that we are wired with from birth. As it says in Psalms 51, we are born in sin, conceived in iniquity, meaning we are born wired inherently to protect and watch out for number one, watch out for self. This is antagonistic to actual healthy altruistic love. And so in our core, we have this drive that when push comes to shove, undermines our ability to love well, and we will take advantage of others in order to get our own needs met.
Now, let's stay with the healthy love just for a little bit longer here, Dr. Jennings. As we grow, when should we start being able to look beyond ourselves and appreciate the fact that there's other people in this world?
I think it's very early in childhood. If we have a genuinely healthy home with loving parents that can model healthy love, then the child can begin to experience the healthy love because of God's continued work on planet Earth. That God, it says, you know, in Scripture that He puts enmity between us and the serpent. So He's putting a desire. Spirit is trying to motivate us to be loving, and we find joy and health and happiness in this. And so this can start at a very early age.
What word are you going to be using in this program then to describe the love that's not healthy?
It's called dependency. Dependency, some call it codependency. But it's a counterfeit to actually healthy love. Love originates in God and is the principle of giving, of beneficence, of other-centeredness, without fear. It's the principle of doing right regardless of how one feels. Conversely, dependency originates in self and is taking, it's exploitive, it's self-centered, it's fear-ridden, and it's the practice of gratifying self, often motivated by emotions or feelings. So these things are contradictory and opposite of each other.
But isn't there some kind of benefit of the self-centered love? I mean, don't we have self-preservation in here? Isn't this part of it?
Yeah, that's exactly what the world would have you think. That's exactly what evolutionists would have you think. It's exactly what the laws of the land, self-defense, would have you think. This is how corrupted our thinking has become, because we actually think that this is justifiable, that it's reasonable, that it's appropriate. We go to great lengths to defend it, and it is actually holding on to the very infection that is destroying us. If you look at the world through the lens that God has designed the universe to operate upon, no, it is not healthy to have that desire to save and protect self. Greater love is no man that he give his life for a friend.
Wow.
This is how we know what love is, that Christ gave his life for us, and we ought to give our lives for each other. Those described in Revelation 12 as ready to meet Jesus are described with, these are they who do not love their life so much as to shrink from death. No, they're not trying to protect self anymore. A transformation comes. That's healthy, genuine, godly love, where we really love him and others more than we love ourselves.
Dr. Jennings, are you a Mr. Rogers fan at all? Do you remember Mr. Rogers on television? The message this man, I love the program, I love the man, the message this man was giving out was, you know, it's all about you. You are the reason we're here. You. Do you think there was a damaging aspect of that message?
I wouldn't want to speculate on that. I really never watched the show, I wouldn't want to speculate on that program.
Okay, all right. Because there was a move in the 70s, 60s and 70s, where it was all about, you know, I'm okay, you're okay, I'm my best friend, me, I. And I just noticed that there was a shift in humanity from being other-centered to being very self-centered. And I imagine that you witnessed that as well?
Well, actually, they've done studies, I think, for the last 20 years where they take a random sample of college freshmen entering the college and have them take a questionnaire that measures narcissism or self-centeredness. And every year for the last 20 years, the entering class is more self-centered than the class before. It's been a steady progression of selfishness, self-centeredness, egocentrism, getting more and more ingrained into the people of our society with every generation.
It would seem then that, based on what you said earlier, that we are heading down a pretty dangerous path here. If we are becoming more and more self-centered and true love is other-centered, my goodness, Dr. Jennings, is there hope for us?
Not in our own self, not in the government, not in our own strength, not in the modern psychology or psychiatry. There is absolutely hope, but that hope only comes external to ourselves in a relationship with the God of love, who originated and designed life to operate in harmony with his character of love. That's the only place we can experience this.
In other words, if we want to experience true love, we can't do it on our own. We have to have outside forces working with us. Is that right?
Yes, and whether we acknowledge those forces or not, some people experience genuine love, and it's still God working in their heart. They just haven't come to a knowledge of how they've been able to do that.
That's the most amazing thing about God, that, you know, he's down there and he's helping and he's whispering in the ear and he's trying to guide people who reject him. People who say, I don't believe in God. There's God right there trying to work through their lives anyway. Pretty impressive God, wouldn't you say, Dr. Jennings?
I think that's what love does. I think about a parent who has a child, and that child maybe has been kidnapped at birth. Maybe somewhere early on the child was told lies about the parent. So in the child's mind, the child has come to think that the parent is someone who is to be avoided. The parent is someone hostile to them, but the parent is gracious and loving. And what is that parent still going to do, knowing that child has been deceived? We'll do all that's in the best interest of that child, regardless of what the child's attitude toward the parent is. That's what's happened to mankind. We have been deceived about God's character, his goodness. He knows that. And so he is gracious, kind, loving, patient, constantly working to remove the distortions about him from our minds so that we can come back into that loving relationship with him where he can heal us to actually experience real love that brings health and happiness.
My. Okay, well, let's dive right in here. I'll remind our listeners that our phone lines are open, 800-775-4673. If you have a question or comment on this topic, we would love to hear from you, 800-775-4673. Okay, Dr. Jennings, you have distinguished for us the difference between healthy love and dependency. Healthy love is being others-centered, dependency being self-centered. Describe for us a codependent person. What's that relationship look like?
Well, dependency, as we understand the underlying roots, see, the outside behaviors can often look very similar, but the underlying roots in the heart are what really matters. See, dependency, we talk about love first. Love is giving.
Yeah.
Well, lots of dependent people say, oh, I'm a giver. I give all the time. And they think that's love. Here's the difference. Love gives in order to gives, in order to give, and rejoices in doing the actual experience of doing for others. Dependency gives in order to get and is irritated or frustrated or hurt or upset if some type of return, recognition, reward, affirmation, appreciation is not received for their giving.
Giving is enough for healthy love is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Think about a parent when your children were little. When you could do something good for them, even something they didn't like taking to get their vaccines, and they cried the entire time. So there was no gleeful joy jumping up and down, happy for Christmas morning going on. Okay. But as a parent giving that vaccine, you still had a sense of joy and peace in your heart because you knew you just did something to protect that child for years to come from disease and illness. So you had joy because you gave what was best for that child. Dependency, on the other hand, may give a present, but if the person doesn't appreciate the present, if the person doesn't thank them, then they may be frustrated, hurt, angry. What's wrong with you? You never appreciate everything I do. That type of thing.
My. Okay. All right. I'm beginning to sense this, what you're saying here. So if I want to live healthfully, if I want to love healthfully, I need to do so from an other-centered standpoint and also give. And giving is its own reward.
Yes, but right? this understanding these principles doesn't mean you have the ability to make a change. It'd be like saying, I understand I need to get this big tumor out of my lung. That doesn't mean you can just, by the force of will, get the tumor out of your lung.
That's true.
Okay, so insight does not equal change, but we need to understand the problem and then go to the source for healing.
All right. And we're going to do just that as we continue this discussion on the difference between healthy love and dependency. Very important topic for us. Again, phone lines are open for your questions and comments. 800-775-4673. We'll take a short break and be back with Dr. Timothy Jennings in a minute. So stay put.
Here's your Daily Heartbeat with Dr. James Markham.
Are you tired of taking a lot of prescription medications? All these pills that have side effects and cost a lot of money? Sometimes they don't even work. Well, the Bible is full of prescriptions that can change your chemistry. Maybe you don't have to take as many medications. One of the best ones is the treatment of laughter. Have a good belly laugh. You know how you feel after you have a good laugh? Those endorphins are flowing in your body. These frequently counteract the bad chemicals, the epinephrines, the cortisols, which stresses out. All over the world, they have laughing clubs which are used as treatment. In the proverb, it says, a merry heart doeth good like medicine. So your biblical treatment for the day is a good belly laugh.
Thank you, Dr. Markham. If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Welcome to Happy Hank's Hamburger Heaven. May I take your order?
Let me have a double cheeseburger, no onions, medium fries, and a Diet Sprite. Plus, I'm lost. I need some directions if you can help me.
Thank you. That's a double cheeseburger minus the onions, medium fries, Diet Sprite, and enrollment in the Discover Bible Course.
I'm sorry, what?
The Discover Bible Course. You said you wanted directions in life.
No, just to the 101 freeway.
I know. But this is even better. With a Discover Bible Course, you'll know where you're going for eternity. You'll never be lost again. You'll drive down the freeway with a whole new purpose in life.
Okay, I'll try it.
That comes to $4.72 for the food. The Discover Bible course is free. Please pay at the window.
Thanks.
For your own set of personal directions to eternal life, call 800-775-4673.
Welcome back to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. I'm your host, Charles Mills. We are talking about love today, and there are two kinds, according to our guests today, two broad kinds, the healthy kind and then the counterfeit, the what they call dependency. And Dr. Jennings, let's get practical here. When you look at a relationship of two people, what does a codependency or dependency relationship look like?
Well, I'm going to actually go through some examples, but I'm going to contrast as we go through that what dependency does and what love does, so they can have a contrast in their mind. But dependent people will focus a lot of their attention and effort on solving the problems of others. They will often describe themselves as, you know, being contender-hearted or compassionate or being overly caring or being the problem solver or being the one everybody comes to with their problems, this type of thing. And the reality is, as it's structured this way in their mind, they say, well, I'm trying to help other people. I'm trying to help other people solve problems. In reality, they're doing this not because they really are concerned for the problems and the best welfare of the other person, but in solving other people's problems, they're doing this so they can be loved or valued or appreciated, or to foster in the other person a need for the one who's solving problems so that they themselves will be needed and valued and cherished. So the primary motivation is actually self. Love, on the other hand, does what is actually best for the other person, which actually may be letting the other person learn how to solve their own problems so that they mature, develop, and experience autonomy rather than always seeking to be a problem solver for others.
Well, Dr. Jennings, isn't it a loving thing to want to help someone solve their problems?
Yes, what does it mean to help? Are we helping them solve a problem, or are we helping them gain a skill and a mastery so that they don't need help solving problems in the future? What's really helping?
Well, unpack that one for us.
If you're a math teacher and you're wanting to help, do you help by just giving a list of the answers to all the problems? Or do you do you try to let the students wrestle with the problems after you've shared and explained the principles, but then you have to leave them to wrestle and work out some of these problems on their own, or they never learn the skill? So in life, yes, a loving person will model, direct, explain, instruct, but at some point, doesn't the person have to let the other person have time to wrestle through, work through, and solve problems, or else they never learn how?
In other words, you're saying that the person who's trying to help does not necessarily have to remain in the conflict to resolution.
Right. But it still goes to motivation. The dependent person sees themselves as taking on themselves the burdens. In reality, the dependent person rarely ever solves a problem for somebody. Rarely ever. What they do is they instead take on the emotional burden. They worry, they stress, they cry, they feel distressed because of someone else's, and they take upon themselves this perspective that they're taking other people's problems. And they will offer, you know, empathy and all this stuff, but it's always designed to somehow get back from the person appreciation, value, love. It's designed to gratify self.
Okay. All right. It's interesting. Both my wife and I joined Facebook, and we were saying the other day that, you know, now we got everybody else's problems to worry about because we hear about them, we see them. And are we talking about the difference between worrying about someone or actually being involved and trying to help them?
Yeah, I think that those are slightly different things. Truly loving person seeks to help, but the help might be to do nothing and allow a person to wrestle through the problem.
Or give encouragement, possibly?
It can be giving encouragement, but it depends on the circumstance. Right. Another aspect of dependency, a classic, is putting the needs of other people above the needs of self. This idea of basically abasing oneself, always giving in to what other people want, never really standing up and setting healthy boundaries. And they do this. This is really, though, only in external appearances. It appears as if they're putting other people's needs first. But the dependent's primary need is to be valued and appreciated. So the reason they're actually appearing to put other people's needs first is because they need to be liked and they need to be appreciated. So it's their actual selfish need that is really being put first.
Okay.
But love genuinely seeks to uplift and bless others. And so the thought would be very much, I'm going to do what is in the best interest of the other party, regardless of whether they appreciate it or not. So a parent will discipline, put a kid in timeout, maybe pop their little bottom if that's what they need, or whatever. And the kid may not like it, but we're not concerned about being the child's friend. We're concerned about doing what's best for them. Another aspect of dependency is dependency takes responsibility for meeting the needs of others. They assume responsibility that isn't theirs.
Responsibility. That's the key word in it, responsibility.
In order to feel important or valued. Hey, I've got to, you know, my grown daughter is going through divorce and I've got to do something to fix that. Well, you don't have the responsibility to fix your daughter's marriage. Mm-hmm. That's her responsibility. You have the responsibility to love your daughter, but loving your daughter can't fix her marriage.
And you have to realize that. You have to realize that. In other words, if you try to step in and get involved personally, that may not be in the best interest of the daughter. But instead of just adding encouragement, I love you, no matter what happens, you are my daughter and I love you, that kind of thing?
Again, generally, this taking on responsibility is more of a perspective, emotional experience. I feel responsible. This sense. And then with that attitude, they move forward in the interaction. And they will feel burdened, and they do this in order to feel important or valued. Hey, I'm integral. They can't solve this without me. You see?
They need to
feel important or feel valued, rather than realizing that in this particular circumstance situation, you're really not integral to the solution.
So in your work, Dr. Jennings, as a Christian psychiatrist, in your work, your job is to what? How would you describe what you do with your patients that come to you?
My job is to assess, diagnose, and prescribe treatment plans that the patient will then evaluate and determine whether they're willing to participate in or not. It's not my job to get them to participate. It's their job to decide whether they're willing to participate.
There you go. All right. So you are practicing what you're preaching here. This is very good. I'm liking this. You are leading them. You are providing information for them, but you do not take on the responsibility of how they react to what you say to them.
I don't take on the responsibility. I may prescribe a medication, but I'm not going to go get it filled. I'm not going to follow them home. I'm not going to put it in their mouth and make them swallow it. They have to take responsibility to do those things. So when a loving person can, If the situation is right, share perspective, wisdom, help a person walk through different options to solve the problem that they might be in. But at the end of the day, the person is left free to determine whether they're going to make those decisions for their own lives or not. I have many people come in relationship problems, and whether the person stays married or the person divorces, that's not my decision to make. What we do is we process through the circumstances, the options, what things can be brought to bear to fix and improve the situation, what is most reasonable and healthy given the facts and evidence, and the person ultimately has to make their own decision what they're going to do with their life.
If someone is loving someone else and they're going through a problem and they want to be in that person's life in a healthy way, how do you measure success? What do you say, okay, I succeeded in what God wanted me to do for that person? How do you measure it?
I think that question has some assumptions in it that may not be brought out. They love somebody and want to be in their life. Okay, what does that other person want you in their life? How about, God loves Lucifer and wants to be in Lucifer's life, and Lucifer rebels and doesn't want God in his life anymore. So how does God influence and help Satan now? What was God's ultimate response to Satan? Well, he spoke with him. He presented evidence with him. He pled with him. But at some point, did God say, Satan, son, if that's what you insist on doing, I will grant you your freedom. You can go. So if you love somebody and you want to be in their life, don't you have to first assess, well, do they want me in their life? And then if they say, yes, they want me in their life, then do you have to assess, what are the terms on which they're going to allow me into their life? I have patients that come see me in relationships in which a woman is in a relationship with a man, and the man wants this woman in the relationship on the terms that she subordinates herself to him. that she has no other friends, has no contact with family, that she doesn't have, doesn't ask questions. She just does what she's told, keeps silent, and so forth and so on. Yeah, he wants her in her life, but are those terms she's willing to be involved in?
Is dependency an all or nothing thing, or does it begin slow and build? What's it look like as it begins to develop in someone's life?
All of us in childhood, at birth, this is what makes it so insidious, is because we are born again defective. We are born insecure and fearful. We are born watching out to try to get our needs met. And at normal development in a world of sin, there is a healthy normal dependency that a infant and small child has upon loving parents. If the parents do their job well, though, the parent's goal is to parent a child in such a way that one day they can quit parenting that child. The goal is to raise a child to develop autonomy and independence so that they no longer need to be dependent upon the parent. That would ultimately be the goal of healthy parenting. So I think when you talk about dependency and how it gets started when things go awry in development, where things happen where the child does not experience healthy love. Doesn't mean healthy love wasn't necessarily given, but something could interfere with the child's ability to experience healthy love, because healthy love is the only solution to avoid having some type of dependent dynamics.
Isn't it? Speaking as a man, don't I want my wife to depend on me in certain areas of life?
See,
Doesn't that make me feel better about it?
And that's a classic layperson response, because we're not talking about appropriate dependence when you depend on somebody to provide. If you're a homekeeper and you depend on your husband to make the money and he depends on you to cook the meals and those types. We're not talking about dependency of that type. That is not involved in this at all. We're talking about a dependency in which you have an emotional need for someone to provide for you an internal sense of well-being that should be derived from your from a healthy internal formed self in relation with God, so that you don't feel whole as a human being without the constant inflow of external validation and affirmation from others. Without that, you feel insecure, you feel empty, you feel worthless. So you're constantly seeking external emotional sustenance in order for you to actually feel whole as a human being. And so it's an emotional dependency we're talking about here. And in that relationship, you're oriented such that you are constantly seeking to get. To sustain yourself, you have to be drawing from others rather than having a whole self where you can give.
All right. This is excellent stuff. This is important. Phone lines are open for your questions and comments, listener. I like asking questions, but I may not ask the question you want. So here's your chance to do that. 800-775-4673. 800-775-4673. Take a short break and be back with Dr. Jennings. So stay there.
This is Ivan Williams with Brighter Hope, WWJD. What Would Jesus Do? Began in the hearts of a youth group at the Calvary Reformed Church in Holland, Michigan. They pondered how they could affect their generation and culture and even their world. These young people sparked a revolution that has continued on even today. What a question. What would Jesus do? All areas of decision are impacted. Integrity and generosity, fairness, right or wrong choices, truth or lies, love or hate is impacted by this question. It simply asks, what would Jesus do in all things? You have hope in Jesus Christ.
It's funny, I never used to think about my vision. But one day everything started to look a little blurry, right in the center of my eye. Then I really got worried when the newspaper prints started to look wavy. The doctor told me I have a disease called macular degeneration, and that I could lose all of my central vision. I was very upset to think about giving up driving and reading, or that one day I might not be able to see the faces of my grandchildren. Luckily, I discovered the Foundation Fighting Blindness. They sent me a wonderful information packet, and they told me about a great new clinical trial right in my area, testing a promising new treatment that could halt my vision loss. To find out more about this and other treatments for macular degeneration, and to receive your free information packet, call the Foundation Fighting Blindness at 800-216-2002. That's 800-216-2002.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author, Dr. Timothy Jennings.
I'll remind you, listener, that there is a website where you can visit and get more information about Dr. Jennings and his ministry and some of the resources available to you to help you live the life that we all have to live. I was just thinking the other day, we were all living the same life. We all just react to it differently. Have you noticed that at all? The website is comeandreason.com, www.comeandreason.com. There's a blog there, program archives, resources like his book, Could It Be This Simple? Incredible book. Also, if you are a Facebooker, I invite you to become a fan of Come and Reason. Just do a little search for Come and Reason. The page will come up, and you just click on Become a Fan and join the lots of people, over 1,000 people already, and we're just still growing, who want to become fans of comeandreason.com, of Come and Reason and Dr. Jennings. Dr. Jennings, we're talking about love here, and there is a need in this world to talk about a counterfeit love, which is brought about by the selfish tendencies we all have because of sin. You're telling us what it looks like. Can you share with us some more insights into what a counterfeit looks like?
Yes, and remember the roots, motivation. The root motivation to the counterfeit love is an insecure fear and need to get your own self gratified, affirmed in some way. Healthy love is motivated by a genuine regard for the well-being of another. Now, the dependency thing can appear as if you're interested in other people, but it's always motivated by trying to get them to give to you something that you're craving. So a dependent person may walk into a room, and when they do, in any social setting, they're automatically, without thinking about it, their social radar goes up, and they begin scanning the room and the environment, trying to perceive what this particular group values, what this particular group likes, what they will appreciate and affirm, and then they begin trying to comport their behavior to meet those expectations so they can be liked by the group. Because what they crave and need is that external affirmation so they can feel good about themselves. If they get rejection, they have a significant despondency, despair, their mood falls, it plummets, they feel inadequate, they feel low. Whereas a healthy person walks into a room and assesses the group and is thinking about, where are these people? What can I do for them? How can I bless them? What are their needs? What are their attitudes? Is there something I can do to share something with them that will build them up in some way? Rather than seeking to get their own need met. So both might be assessing the group, but there's completely different motives and orientation. The one is based in fear and insecurity. And if the person who has a love orientation gets rejected, instead of having despondency, worthlessness, crashing down of an internal sense of well-being, they actually feel a great sense of sadness for the people who rejected them. This is what you see in Jesus Christ. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. He didn't say, Father, why are they doing me this way? All I've ever done was I've healed the sick and I've fed the hungry and I've done all these good things for people, and it's just not fair how they're treating me, Father. It's just not right. See, that would be a dependent personality speaking that way. It's not fair. I've only sought to help people. I've only done this and nobody ever cares about me. That's dependency speaking. Jesus was healthy love. His concern, even in rejection, was the consequence the rejection was having on the other person.
Bring this into a marriage then. A husband should be looking at the wife and saying, you know, what does that person need from me to enhance her life? And the wife should be saying the same thing?
What does Ephesians say? That the husband is to treat the wife as Christ treated or treats the church, sacrificing himself for her. God's design for healthy relationships, for the principles that life is actually constructed to thrive upon, is when we seek freely to give of ourselves to build up another. And in a healthy marriage, the husband is constantly seeking to do what he can to make his wife's life better. And conversely, she is constantly seeking to receive that love and let it flow through her back to her husband again, seeking to make his life better. It's a give, give, constantly give. Sometimes you hear people talk about a 50-50 relationship. That is not a love relationship. That is a dependency relationship where each person is watching out for their own interest and they're constantly negotiating what they can get from the other, and they'll give as long as they can get something back. That is not love.
And giving is enough. When a husband does that or a wife does that and gives to the spouse, it's not the response of the spouse that provides the success or unsuccess of that event. It's the fact that it happened. It took place.
Well, in a person who's got really healthy love and they've really had a healing of their heart, yes. But when we still struggle and we need those affirmations because we have doubts and insecurities with ourselves, then those things will infect. And because we all still are struggling with our carnal natures, we're tempted along those lines. One place to see this more clearly would be in a healthy parent-child relationship. When you're 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old child, and think about your attitudes when you give of yourself to bless that child.
Okay.
Are you expecting something back? Or is your whole joy in knowing you've done a blessing and a good for that child, even if the child doesn't appreciate the fact that you cook them Brussels sprouts and broccoli rather than pizza or candy. You see, they might not appreciate it whatsoever, but can you actually have peace knowing that you are promoting the welfare of that child, even though they don't understand that right now? Well, sometimes
that is a tough one. That's a tough one.
And sometimes in a marriage relationship, we can have one spouse who has more spiritual or other levels of maturity and insight and wisdom than another spouse. And one spouse might want something that's not helpful. I know when it comes to spiritual maturity, sometimes people get married to people who don't believe in God or aren't Christian or rejected God, and therefore that spouse may want to engage in activities that the Christian recognizes would be destructive or damaging. How do we respond? Well, the dependency person would fear rejection from the spouse, would fear that they wouldn't be valued or appreciated anymore, and might compromise what they know is really right in order to maintain the approval of the spouse who is wanting to violate the spiritual principles. The loving spouse would say, "Hey, I love you too much. I love you. It's not about me. It's not about, hey, God's got these rules. I can't break them." It's not legalistic. It's, I love you too much to go along with this, because what you're asking is harmful. It's destructive. It's destructive to you, to your mind, to your conscience, to your character. And I love you too much to participate. I can't stop you if that's what you insist on doing, but I can't participate while you destroy yourself.
You know, for a person who has an unhealthy love, if a spouse does what you just said, that would make that person angry. That would make that person very upset. You know, you're judging me. You're saying what's good and bad for me. How dare you do that? How do you respond when you try doing that and your spouse responds violently to what you're saying?
And you do the same thing. You say, hey, I love you enough that if the only way you know how to handle what I just said is to be angry, you're certainly free to be angry. It doesn't change the reality of what you've asked to do, and it doesn't change the reality of my response. My love is not intimidated by anger.
I like that. I like that. That's where we need to have some power from beyond ourselves. Am I right?
Well, that's exactly right. This type of wisdom doesn't come from a human mind alone. This type of wisdom comes from God's word, comes from his spirit enlightening, and this type of strength and peace in the face of that type of hostility comes from the Holy Spirit within. Another aspect of dependency is that there's an extreme anxiety, an uneasiness, a desperation at the thought of being alone or being separated or anything that would manifest the idea of abandonment. And a dependent person gets frantic and desperate and will do all types of things to avoid this type of rejection, separation, abandonment, whereas the person who genuinely loves the other is not concerned about whether I'm left behind. They're concerned about what's best for the other. If you were genuinely going to be more happy without me, well, then that's what I want for you.
Wow.
You see, I've had patients that I've seen that have made suicide gestures. And when evaluating, why did you do this? Well, my girlfriend was going to break up with me, but I'd love her too much to let her go. And I wanted her to realize how bad she was hurting me so she'd stay. That's not love. That's dependency. No. He was so desperate and terrified that he couldn't function and felt overwhelmed with emotional loss at the prospect of her being gone. He didn't think about her for one second. He wanted to enslave and trap her with this manipulative coercion. If he actually loved her, he would have said, my heart breaks because I love you. But if you are genuinely want to be without me, if you don't want me in your life, I certainly wouldn't want to force you. That's what love does.
800-775-4673 is our phone number if you have a question or comment on this topic. This is a tough one. This is an important topic. 800-775-4673.
One other big one, and I really want to say this, is that people in dependent relationships have deeply entrenched denial systems so they can avoid the reality of their unhealthy state. In other words, they distort the truth and avoid reality, whereas people in love relationships love the truth and always want to grow in the truth. They can accept defects. They can accept the reality of insufficiencies because with that acceptance, they move forward in God's plan to overcome and heal them. Dependency relationships and people in dependency circumstances, dynamics, have to deny, distort, and twist. I had someone in my office yesterday with huge levels of denial and rationalization, and as any type of light was trying to give to this person, it was immediately bent, twisted, and refocused on something that wasn't true. It was amazing.
So how do you get through to that person? Does it take time? What tools do you use to get through to a person like that?
Some you can't get through. You can't get through to a person who doesn't want to get through, really is not interested. Yeah. Ultimately, what gets through is the consequences. This is why God has orchestrated his universe to run in such a way. What gets through to people like that is the repetitive failures of their dependency dynamics to work. So failed relationship after failed relationship, failed job after failed job, failed friendship after failed friendship, over and over again. At some point, hopefully the light goes on and they go, you know what? There must be something wrong with me because I've been in 7 states with 12 different people and 14 different jobs. And what I've been telling myself all along is that all these other people are messed up. Well, maybe I'm the common denominator here. At some point, reality may break through, but it's reality. But that's hard to break through because they really have this hugely entrenched denial system where it is not them. It's everyone else.
I hear that television psychologist saying, you know, how's that working for you? That's sort of what we're saying here. You look at your past, look at the history. Is that really working for you? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly right. Is it getting the outcomes that you want? This dependency dynamics will never result in actually peace and well-being inside it, and will never result in autonomy and independence. Dependency dynamics, as you practice them, actually only cause the problems to get worse. Your confidence goes down. Your self-esteem goes down. Your fear and insecurity goes up. Your neediness and desperation for external affirmation goes up. You compromise your principles in order to maintain relationships even when your own judgment knows it's wrong, which only causes you to lose more confidence in yourself, which makes you more desperate and hungry for someone to affirm you so you can feel better about yourself. It's a terrible vicious cycle downward. And if it's not broken, it actually destroys the person's capacity to think and reason, and they become these empty shadows who only look for other people to kind of guide them and tell them what to do in life.
You know, the same thing is happening in the health field. Now, you're a medical doctor as well as a psychiatrist, and I'm seeing, Dr. Jennings, and you've been on a couple of health programs that I host, that the world is beginning to wake up. They look around and saying, this isn't working. What's happening? The obesity, the diabetes, the heart disease, these things are not working. What we're doing is not working. That realization is dawning, and you're saying that realization needs to be dawning in the minds of people who are dependent. Am I right?
That's exactly right. And I guess the question I would tell our listening audience is step back and ask, hey, how are my relationships? Look at the history of my own life. Have I had a repetitive pattern of difficulties throughout my life? If so, there may be an aspect within me that needs to be healed. As we come back in the last section of our show, I want to take the listeners through some comparators, that's a test that they can give and they can ask in real time about the relationship they're in right now, which will help them diagnose whether their relationship is a love relationship or whether their relationship is a dependency relationship. And with that diagnosis, then that puts them in a position to be able to make a decision. Okay, wow, I'm in a dependent relationship. What do I want to do about it?
All right. Listener, get a pad and paper and get some pencils there, and let's take this test on our return with Dr. Jennings. This is important to your relationship, to your life. You need to know these things and recognize where help is needed. We also have our phone lines open for your questions and comments. 800-775-4673. When we come back, have your paper and pencil ready, because you're about to learn some things about yourself that will help you live a much better life if you can just learn what Dr. Jennings is telling us today. Stay tuned.
Is your life stuck in fast forward? Are you doing more and enjoying less? Do you feel stressed out and tired?
If so, help is here. Speaker, pastor, and author Carl Hafner points the way to relief for the stressed out, worn out, and burned out. With humor and wisdom, Carl Hafner shows in his new book, Soul Matters, that it's possible to live a sane and balanced life in a world gone mad. But there's a catch. You must learn to cheat the lesser gods and clamor for your attention in order to honor the one true God. Find rest for your weary soul. Pick up a copy of Carl Hafner's book, Soul Matters, today. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
His first pictures were supposed to be in his mother's arms. His first months were supposed to be at home. His first years weren't supposed to be such a worry. It's no one's fault. We did everything right. But still, our son was born 3 months premature, and no one knows why.
More than 460,000 babies are born premature each year, before 37 weeks of pregnancy. That's 1 in 8 of all births. Nearly half the time, there is no known cause. Many are born so soon and so small, they face serious lifelong health problems. Others don't survive the first year. Please support March of Dimes research so we can learn more about the causes of premature birth and how to prevent it. Visit marchofdimes.com or call 1-888-966-3222.
I just wish someone could tell me why.
Premature birth. The answers can't come soon enough.
Welcome back to our program. Before we go any further, a reminder, www.comeandreason.com. Check it out. Lots of good articles and posts there, blogs and program archives, resources like the Could It Be the Simple book. And also, if you are a Facebooker, become a fan of Come and Reason. Search for it and click on the Become a Fan page, and there's information that Dr. Jennings makes available there as well. So you can interact with the man himself. Okay, speaking of interacting, we're about to have a little test here, Dr. Jennings, I think, which can change some lives. Am I right?
Actually, before we even do that, let's talk about the phases of a dependent relationship, and then let's go through some of the tests that a person
All right.
can give.
And let's run those phases.
And we'll run through the phases real quick. But this is what happens. And you can look at this cycle and see if, in fact, you've had this cycle in your relationships in the past. And if so, it's a red flag. Hey, I've got dependency issues. I need to address those. But first is the search phase. Search phase is when you're not in a relationship and you're out there on the hunt and you're looking for a new person. But once the relationship engages, the way the relationship functions is the same as previous relationships with the same dependent dynamics we've already discussed. After the search phase, there's the attraction phase. And the attraction phase is when you found somebody, you've locked on, the radar is locked, okay, got my target locked. And then fantasy overshadows reality. We invest in this person qualities that are not really inherent in the person, but we project from our inner world what we believe they need to be our perfect other person, and then we see them in this idealized light. So search phase, attraction phase, where we project onto them, and we idealize them in a way that's beyond reality. And then next is the relief phase, where the relationship begins. We actually have not only been attracted, we've targeted on, we've been able to interact in a way that now we're dating, we're in a relationship. This is a euphoric high. This is when everything is right. All my problems are solved. All the negatives of the past are wiped away. I'm actually okay. Relationship is initiated. next at some point, not usually too far into the relationship, usually 3 months or so, is called the anxiety phase. The anxiety phase is when reality begins to shatter fantasy, because we've projected onto this person all these qualities that aren't really there, and so the person can never live up to this idealized view, and reality begins to shatter the fantasy. We start to get anxious and restless and uneasy within this relationship. And so how do we deal with that? Next is denial phase. We deny what we're actually seeing. We make excuses. We avoid reality. We distort. We twist. Oh, he didn't really mean it. Oh, he would really have done that if, and on it goes with all the denial. Oh, he has so much potential if only, this type of thinking. And then next comes escalation phase, which is emotional desperation with irrational behaviors and attempts to save the relationship. And this can be anything from hysterical tantrums, throwing and breaking things, threatening to harm oneself, even threatening to leave. You don't want to leave, but you're threatening to leave in order to get the other person. Desperate criticism, derogatory statements about the self. I'm the worst person ever. How could you ever want to be with me, in order to gender this, oh, no, you're not response type thing. So escalation phase. And then the last would be the withdrawal phase, which is the disengagement, the broken relationship, followed by depression, and then the depression with instant propulsion in back into search phase to start the cycle all over again.
You just described about every relationship I've ever heard of in this world. You just described it. Oh, my goodness. We're in trouble in this country, in this world.
Well, I think that without God in our lives, remember, our natural state is a carnal state, a self-centered state. It's me-focused state. It's survival of the fittest state. That is our broken condition. Without a converted heart, a new heart and right spirit, we seek relationships for self, and we're fear-motivated in their orientation. Only the converted person who has a new heart and right spirit seeks relationship from a different perspective and loves others more than self, and then these types of cycles don't get engaged in.
Search, attraction, relief, anxiety, denial, escalation, and withdrawal. Wow. Okay, Dr. Jennings, let's find out if we're heading in that direction.
Okay.
How can you help us?
So if you're in a relationship and you'd like to know, hey, is my relationship predominantly a loving relationship with some residual dependency issues we're about to extinguish, or is my relationship predominantly dependency with very little genuine love? How do I know? Love, and you can actually real time ask and answer these questions honestly.
Okay.
Love relationships are healing, where dependency relationships are destructive. So ask, I've been in this relationship for 3 years. Am I a healthier person? Do I have greater sense of peace? Do I have greater capacities for decision making? Do I have greater sense of autonomy? Am I, as a human being, maturing, developing, growing in all of my capacities? Or in fact, do I feel more uncertain, more insecure, have more difficulty making decisions, feel more frustrated, more irritated, more emotionally unstable? What's happened to me in this relationship? Love relationships will bring a greater sense of healing over time. Love relationships are freeing, where dependency relationships are controlling, and this can go on both sides of it. Love relationships really present and promote the autonomy and the freedom of the other party. We respect their decision-making, their individuality. Where dependency relationships seek to control the other person, it could be like controlling their responses to us. So we're constantly scanning the environment. We're behaving. We're not saying what's really on our mind. We're having temper tantrums. Whatever we're doing, we're trying to control to make sure that they go where we want them to go, respond the way we want them to respond. Love is interested in the other, the actual welfare of the other, where dependency is actually interested in self. Is my primary motivation because I need him. I need her. I can't function without her. She has to be there. He has to be there. Love is stable. Dependency is wavering. So look at this relationship and ask over the history of it. Has this been a very stable, steady, smooth relationship? Or has it been very much like a roller coaster? We have intense highs and we have these trauma lows, and it's constantly in a state of flux, and you never know what you're going to get from day to day. That's consistent with a dependency relationship. Love relationships, there really is no fear. You go into the room with this person and you have complete peace to be yourself in every way. You're not afraid of rejection. You're not afraid if you make a boo-boo that they're going to be upset with you or criticize you. Dependency relationships are based in fear. You actually go in the room with a sense of apprehension. What are they going to say today? How will they respond? Oh no, what happens if I do this? Oh, will I get this criticism? So there's this apprehension and fear in dependency relationships. Love is actually honest and truthful, whereas dependency relationships are dishonest and deceitful. And dishonest and deceitful doesn't mean you're necessarily lying purposely to the other person. I'm talking about the dishonesty to oneself, where you don't accept the truth about the situation that you're in, and you deny and distort, as we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Love is patient. Dependency is impulsive. In your relationship, are you willing to be patient over time, allow things to work out? Do you have to have your needs met now? I can't stand it. I can't wait until such and such. I can't wait for this week while they're gone. I'm going to die this week without them. I've got to. I'll just get on a plane and fly. Whatever. That's dependency dynamics. Love is kind, where dependency is cruel. And the cruelty is to both parties. Love, here's another good test. Love is forgiving, genuinely forgiving. Dependency keeps score, resentful, holds grudges. Do you have a score in your head? Is the score constantly being brought up? Is issues from the past brought up over and over and over again? This is another evidence. And so if you can check off this list, you can go down this list and you will find that you can check these off. And you can ask the question based on the evidence. Hey, what is this diagnose? Am I in a relationship that's really love-based? Or my relationship that is dependency-based?
Dr. Jennings, I want to quickly bring a caller in. Joe from England has a question. Joe, you have about 60 seconds. What's on your mind today? Can someone push the button there so we can talk to Joe? Apparently not. Okay, we'll talk to Joe next time. So, Joe, can you talk to us now?
I can.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Joe. You have 60 seconds. Go ahead.
I'd like to know, how do I deal with jealous feelings?
Jealous feelings?
Yes, I think you have to step back and ask, why are you jealous? Are you jealous because you're concerned about the welfare and happiness of the other person? Or are you jealous because you're feeling fearful and insecure that this person may not want to be with you or care for you, or someone may take her away from you?
I'd say I'd be feeling a bit jealous that the person might not want to be with me and would like to be with someone else.
Right. And so how you deal with that is you actually look at your own heart and say, hey, do I really love this person or I just love myself? If I really want the happiness of this person, then I want them to be with somebody who will make them happy. And if it's not me, then I'll be happy for them to find another. I don't need them to make me happy. I'm interested in their welfare and happiness.
Joe, thank you very much for your call. I wish we could talk to you some more. Our time is up. Thank you, Joe. God bless you. You know, as we're closing here, Dr. Jennings, there's a text in the Bible that says God is a jealous God. How do you explain that?
Because he's jealous for our health, our happiness. That is not jealous for his need. He's jealous to protect us from danger. You could say a parent is a jealous parent, jealous for the right school system, the right food, the right vaccinations for their kid. That's a jealousy of protection, to protect what he loves, not to get something for himself.
All right. Now, Dr. Jennings, may I ask you a favor? We went through these very quickly at the end of the program. Could we talk a little bit more about it next week and unpack each of these items a little bit more next week on our program?
Sure. Absolutely.
We'll make that happen. Okay, so tune us in next week at the same time, listener, and Dr. Jennings will unpack some of this information for you next week or in shows to come. We'll make sure we get it covered because we went rather rapidly over them. And these are very important steps. Dr. Jennings, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it always. And listener, www.comeandreason.com, a very important website for you to visit, comeandreason.com. Also, you can get a copy of Dr. Jennings' book, Could It Be This Simple, from that website as well. Facebookers, come and reason, come become a fan. We'd like that. Until next week, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Timothy Jennings, inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings, and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.